Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thanks for listening to Dusty and Cam podcast, brought to you on the fan by your local Les Schwab Tire Center. Doing the right thing since 1952.
Dusty and Cam in the morning.
Stay here. Stay as long as you can.
For the love of God, cherish it.
With Dusty Hera.
That's so sad for my team and me. I'm such a big supporter.
And NFL veteran Cam Cleland.
Oh, you can count. Good for you.
And you can count on me waiting for you in the parking lot.
On 1080.
It's showtime.
The Fan.
Good morning. It's Tuesday, November 14th.
Your most hated day of the week.
No, it's not anymore, Cam. No. I've turned over a new leaf. I love every day of the week.
Well, that lasted all but an hour.
I have a love for life. I love waking
up every
day.
Gosh, are you lying your backside off right now? It's terrible. Nobody's buying it.
I love it.
I don't buy it.
I love it. I'm happy for a Tuesday. Mm-mm. You know, I do. I look at November 14th and I am reminded of something that I saw last week that we need to have a public service announcement. Tim Tebow is a horrible person.
What?
Yes. Last week.
We need a G.I. Joe interruption here.
We need the G.I. Joe
theme song here.
Last week, I saw something that Tim Tebow posted to his social media account.
Why?
That troubled me greatly. He already has his Christmas stockings up on his fireplace. Not just for him, but for his dog as well. This was last week. We were in single digits of November.
Yeah.
I think that is far too early to start putting stockings up and celebrating Christmas. We're a month and a half out. A month and a half.
You know, I know it's too far. Now, here's the other thing, too. I mentioned this. Did you know when I came home from Thanksgiving, Halloween night, and I passed out candy at 9 o'clock at night. I flipped on the television very briefly. There had already been a Christmas commercial built into the rotations.
Yeah.
They understood that when 9 o'clock hit, which was 12 o'clock East Coast time, it was essentially, it was no longer Halloween. It was November 1st. And we got it here on the West Coast. And I went, okay, this is what it is. Haven't you been into the local stores, the big box stores and everything? They start putting it out in late August. So what it is anymore, I think the whole year should just be Christmas, holiday, Christmas time. Let's just do it. Stop beating around the bush and tell me when I can or when I can't put up my stockings. Because it's pointless.
No.
I gotten this the other day.
It's
I said to somebody, they said, I'll put that up as soon as Halloween's end. It's up. Everything's up.
You know, my wife has.
Thanksgiving is completely, it's a forgotten thing. It's just, no turkeys, none.
Yeah, there are.
No cornucopias out. What happened to the cornucopia project? What happened to the turkey project that you make out of paper?
My wife has a friend from high school, and he's a good guy. He and his family put up their Christmas tree.
No, that's against the rules. Okay,
Halloween.
That's against the rules.
No, seriously.
What is it?
It's a fake Christmas tree. They decorate it and go the whole nine yards. I do not like Christmas music until after Thanksgiving.
I
draw a hard line there.
I agree.
Will not do it.
I agree. Describe the type of person that does that, that needs Christmas for 2 months.
I don't know.
Who needs it for 2 months? Is that about that?
Nobody needs it. No. Well, it's
not special anymore. If it's 2 months worth, then what's the point? That's like celebrating your birthday four times during the week. You know that? You know that person? Yeah, I have the work party. Then I have my mom and dad's party, and then my kids are going to throw me a party, and then guess what? My friends are going to take me out Friday nights. You get a 5-day birthday? Is that how it works?
Yes, I know.
Do you know that person?
I dated a girl in college. She said it was her birthday till the birthday cake was gone, and she would just have cake, and that didn't work.
Why do you get 5 birthdays?
She'd keep it forever.
Or half birthdays, or all these other crappy things that you create.
I don't know. If it's your half birthday coming up, though, I hope you appreciate the half birthday email reminder that you get from 1080 The Fan with Cam and I.
We were forced to do that.
Yes, we were. Yes, we were.
And I was very...
not too thrilled about that.
I was upset by that.
But Tim Tebow is not a horrible person, but I judge him greatly because of the Christmas stocking for he and his dog in early November. Just too early, man. Just too early. Pump the brakes, Tim.
Nothing special anymore.
It's not.
It's kind of like from The Incredibles. When I'm super, nobody's super. Right? Isn't that what he said? Remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, you're when talking about syndrome.
When everybody's super, nobody's super.
Look what happened.
You're taking
to him.
All the days away, people.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are.
Haters.
All right.
Haters are going to hate.
Wait, who's hate? Are you calling me a hater for not liking
Tim
Tebow?
No, I'm hating myself and my.
I don't. I'm confused.
Self.
Let's start our show.
I remember it was just like yesterday.
On this day in sports history, 1943, Bears quarterback Sid Luckman becomes the first quarterback ever to throw for 400 yards in a game as he lit up the Giants' defense for 7 touchdowns as well.
How long ago was that?
1943. That would be 74 years ago. Is that right?
Sounds good.
Horrible at math, but I think it's 74
years ago.
You said
Luckman?
Yeah, Sid Luckman.
That's a good last name. I like it. I'm a lucky man.
Probably the best quarterback the Bears have had since. Do you think Luckman. You think he can go out there and still throw a pass?
The Bears?
They need one.
Kind of forgot Jim McMahon. He was good. Mike Tomczak was good. Jim Harbaugh was good.
I mean,
what are you talking about?
Name the
Rex
truly
Grossman.
The truly great Bears quarterbacks. Name
that's
them.
What I just I said.
Mean, Jim, are we going Jim McMahon? Jim McMahon won a Super
he
Bowl.
Won a Super Bowl
with the best defense.
Doesn't matter.
Ever.
You still won a Super Bowl. Yeah, no, he was very good.
Jim McMahon is the best, probably in their franchise's history, outside of Sid Luckman, of course.
Sure.
How many 400-yard games did Jim McMahon have?
I don't know. He didn't have to. He handed it sweetness.
See.
But it was good.
Today.
All right, I'm looking this up. How many times a Bears quarterback has thrown for 400 yards?
Well, I guarantee you that Mike Tomczak did it.
Oh, yeah.
I know that so. Jim Harbaugh did it. There were some others.
Okay.
Rex Grossman, I know, did.
Rex Grossman, you know Rex Grossman.
Yeah, because they got to the Super Bowl that year. Yeah, because that was Lovie Smith.
So he had to have thrown for 400 yards in a game? 400 yards in a game is a lot.
I know, I'm just saying had to have.
at some point,
I think you got to have. If you're a winning franchise, you should at least have one 400 yard game in your tenure as a quarterback. That's fair.
Yeah, sure. All right, here we go. On today's program, we will discuss the Portland Trailblazers Monday Night Football, relevancy of football in the Pac-12 in the Northwest. How do you feel right now? Right now, we're tucked up in the Northwest, where when's the last time that it has been just done and over by mid-November? Out. Done. Because it's been a long haul. Not even 2 years ago. Wait, you're going to save that?
Yeah, I'm saving that question. I'm going to throw this question out for you. You local sports and football fans.
It feels like we have football apathy here in the Northwest, and we still have got two really good teams playing.
Yep.
And in the Portland area, it almost seems like an afterthought.
Time to wake up.
Wow. The last quarterback to throw for 400 yards for the Bears? Jim Miller. 1999. They've only had three times they've had a quarterback throw for 400 yards.
Rex Grossman did not?
No. Billy Wade in 1962, Sid Luckman in 1943, and Jim Miller in 1999. Yowzas.
Goodness.
Yeah. Okay.
Good trivia day.
Yeah. Don't feel bad, America. Italy isn't going to the World Cup either, and I'm pretty sure it's a bigger deal there than it is here. The Italians missing out on the World Cup for the first time since 1958.
Ooh-wee.
Wow.
Infectious.
Like,
was there any American players on the Italian team?
No.
Was there an American coach?
They lost to Sweden.
Oh, Sweden's good.
Yeah, sure.
Very good.
What? But
Netherlands, all those northern teams are very good.
They went down to the tiebreaker. They had played the two-game leg against Sweden. Mm-hmm. They lost 1-0 in Sweden. And then a 0-0 tie in Italy means Sweden advances on the aggregates.
Yeah.
Ha-ha. Also of note.
Stupid aggregate rules.
Yeah. Yeah. Aggregates.
Aggres. Need an abacus to figure that out.
Hey, wake up. I said wake up.
Okay. Two notes here. UCLA trio is heading home, according to multiple outlets. LiAngelo Ball, Cody Riley, Jalen Hill are on a Delta flight that is L.A. bound. So
President Trump swings a big stick.
Making deals with President Z.
I'm telling you, it just takes a little bit of politics, yeah, and everybody's feeling happy with each other. Hopefully, when these guys get home, they don't just get to walk into their dorms and have a slap.
I don't think that's going to happen.
You don't think so? Well, I don't think so either. I think there's going to be some repercussions for these young men.
Yeah. Okay. Also, other note, Sean Lee will miss 2 weeks for the Cowboys. Hamstring. Wow.
That's a huge loss for their defense.
Yeah. Yeah. They're
huge.
They're kind of in shambles right now. Mm-hmm. Also, Phillip Rivers is in the concussion protocol. Despite not getting sacked in their loss over the weekend, he didn't really even get hit.
Nope.
Concussion protocol for Phillip Rivers. Probably headbutting a wall. Was that
He's
Gus?
Pretty fiery.
Was that Gus Frerotte who did that?
Headbutt the wall?
Headbutt the wall and sprained his neck.
I did not know
you
that.
You remember that?
No. I don't.
Yeah. Injury. Headbutting a wall after scrambling for a touchdown.
That's all right. I punched a locker once. That was stupid.
That hurt you?
Did it in high school.
Sweet, bro.
Didn't do anything since. I kind of learned that metal is not a good thing to do.
I still haven't learned that
lesson. Punch those things.
No.
If you're going to do it, just open hand slap it. It's a little better.
Yeah. Good I can just see you.
Hey, this is not a test. This is rock and roll. Hey, is it a little too early for being that loud? Hey, too late. It's 0600. What's the O stand for? Oh, my God, it's early.
Wake the f*** up!
Hey, text line lighting up with Christmas-related things. I wonder how many families do this, because RJ texts in, our family watches Christmas Vacation on Thanksgiving night. That's the official start of Christmas. We do that as well. Christmas Vacation. I wonder how many people watch that movie as the official start.
I was upset.
Oh.
I came, my kids had days off last week.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I came home on Friday. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Came home Thursday after doing Talking Huskies. And Christmas Vacation was on.
Oh.
I was.
You tell them to turn it off?
I was very upset.
Turn it off!
Although, it's a good quality item, Clark.
Yep. Can't see the line, can you, Russ? Okay. The Portland Trail Blazers picked up a decisive home win last night.
You serious, Clark?
Hey, kids. I heard Santa's seen flying over Chicago.
Probably just nosing through the trash.
You serious, Clark?
Yeah. I'd go all day with this movie. Poor flushing. Sorry, I won't do that one.
Blazers beat the Nuggets 99-82. Balance, the key to the win. CJ McCollum. Yusuf Nurkic leading the way with 17 points, but seven Blazers had 5 points or more in the game. So a little bit of balance to the scoring last night. Nobody having to bear the burden of the scoring load in the Blazers win. 99-82. We will have more on that game coming up at the top of the hour. Where we start, Monday Night Football. Ugh. Ugh. Cam runs wild, not you, the other Cam. Dustin Cam on the Fan.
This is Dusty and Cam in the Morning on 1080 The Fan.
Okay, Monday Night Football last night, huh? Should we flex Monday Night Football games? You can
it's
do
impossible.
It with Sunday Night Football.
It's impossible to flex because you would have thought Buffalo and the Saints would have been a flexible game. How about that?
Yeah. Yeah, that
you would have thought so. Yeah. I just think every game in the NFL at the rest of our times, from moving on from November all the way through to the end of December, your flex games, really the only ones that do matter are going to be division games late in the season.
On
when those teams have a reason to.
On Sundays where you can do it and it's feasible to do it, you know, like Sunday night football, they can flex that up. It's just moving a game forward, and they do it with plenty of advance.
Yeah, these are interdivisional games. You have an AFC team versus an NFC team. One team is out of it. The other team is really a division leader and fighting the Saints. It just, you're not going to get the same kind of game.
Yeah, I just remember Monday night. Am I crazy for thinking this? That I remember Monday night football was the marquee matchup.
Was a big
and
deal.
Every week the game meant something, and it was a good game.
Growing up, in any time, too, all the way until probably, I'm going to say, in just this past decade, in the early 2000s, all the way through, Monday night football meant something. What is eliminated, what has come out is Monday night football now is a hindrance. Even towards the end of my career in 2006, Monday night football games were an absolute hindrance, and nobody enjoyed it. As a player, so you're not going to get the same amount of effort. Well, it extends your week, so now you get to sit around. And the other part is that you're waiting all day Sunday to play when your body's been trained majority of time. Look, as football players, all of us, we're very much creatures of habits and routine.
No way, you are.
Well, no, it's part of the deal.
I know.
And when you get out of that routine, it's uncomfortable, you're frustrated, and then you don't play as good because you're in a different routine. And then plus, all day Sunday, now let's wait all day Monday. You don't even show up till 5:30. Some games I kicked off in 2002, the Patriots against Pittsburgh. I kicked off at 9:05 p.m. Monday Night Football. That was the first game of it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so you're not going to get the same kind of game because there's nothing on the line.
Yeah, I just remember
no sense
though,
of urgency anymore.
I remember the scheduling though used to be it was the marquee matchups. Those seem reserved now for Sunday Night Football on NBC where we get the better games because. Early in the year, it is they just schedule the better teams. But late in the year, they can flex it out and they can get the matchups that we want. I just don't see, like last year when they made the schedule, who sat there and looked at Monday Night Football and said, Carolina, coming off a 4-win season, let's put them up against 10-win Miami and that'll be a great game this next year. I think that is become part of it in that they don't try and put the best games on there anymore.
No, they just put a product.
And then I think the other part is there's so much parity in the NFL where from year to year you can have these monumental shifts. Because, I mean, look at last year, New Orleans, they went 7-9, and they almost already have 7 wins.
Yeah.
Just barely halfway through the season. You know, like it's easy to turn it around quickly, and you don't know which one's going to be the
shift. Thursday Night Football's killed Monday Night Football because know there's 2 more days before you can watch again. Prior to the time, it was the excitement. It was must-see TV because Monday was there. What else? What other content? When you say Monday, even from the time it first was implemented, Mondays were synonymous with the NFL football. Mm. I mean, when you think of a Monday, what do you think of? Monday Night Football. I mean, the brand owns itself.
Yeah.
But now that we watch it no matter what because we're trained to enjoy it. It doesn't matter if it's good or bad. I mean, when's the last time we've had a great Monday night game? Probably Brett Favre versus the Raiders after his dad Irv had passed away. I mean, I'm sure there's probably been
more. Name-dropping his dad. Yeah. I didn't know his dad's name was Irv.
I met his dad. He's really cool.
I forgot
cool.
that.
But so, yeah, I look at those things and I go, all right, this is exactly why. Because the NFL gives us the product no matter if it's good or not because they know we'll eat it anyway. It's like shoving a plate of food in front of you and know that you're starving. All right, we'll eat it.
Yeah. Man, that's kind of sad, though. And last night it was a clunker of a game. It started out early. Early in that game, it was, wow, both teams probably couldn't play much uglier than they did. You know, Cam Newton looked rough at the beginning, and then he came on and just, I mean, obliterated the Miami Dolphins. He threw for 254 and 4 touchdowns, and then he rushed for 95 yards, something we haven't seen Cam Newton really do in quite some time. And remember when they traded Kelvin Benjamin at the deadline to Buffalo, it was they wanted to get the ball in the playmaker's hands and stop forcing the ball to Kelvin Benjamin is one thing they wanted to do with Cam Newton. Mm-hmm. Wasn't last night kind of highlighting that, wow, maybe Carolina was onto something because of the fact that he spread it around where you had, 5 receivers with more than 3 catches last night, and it wasn't just try to get the ball to your big receiver on the outside.
Yeah, I think that's probably maybe a little bit of it. I'm not going to throw the Dolphins and just sit there and tell you that defense doesn't care anymore, and that team seems to be very checked out and disjointed. So I think it made things a lot easier on Cam Newton yesterday. I noticed, I looked at a team that is very dysfunctional, has quit. You could just see some of the attitudes. You can see the body language in the second half. Just the body language of the defensive backs not finishing the play, the offensive linemen not finishing.
Yeah.
Jay Cutler's body language has always been that way, but his throws, just kind of everything. The best player on that team, to me, is Jarvis Landry. I mean, that dude's elite. He is a very good wide receiver.
Yes, he is.
And he's about all they have. And they have Ndamukong Suh, who's sitting there going, he's double-teamed every single time. Mm-hmm. Cameron Wake is 35 years old. He's old. But he can still get it done a little bit on the outside. They should be a much better football team, and they're not.
Yeah. Does that game say anything about the – because we had Jackson tweet us last night. You know, he said it's crazy how much better the NFC is than the AFC. Three worst divisions and total wins in the NFL all belong to AFC divisions. And if you look across the entire NFL, there is one, two, three, four teams – in the AFC have a winning record against NFC opponents.
Right.
The NFC, I mean, it doesn't seem like it's even close right now. And it won't shock you which teams have winning records against the AFC or NFC from the AFC. It's Kansas City. Mm-hmm. It's Tennessee, Pittsburgh, and New England. The four division leaders are the only teams in the AFC that have a winning record against NFC opponents.
Well, the reason why that is because everybody is chasing in the AFC. They're trying to chase the Patriots. And so they build their teams to try to beat the Patriots. What they, because they're trying to win within their own divisions. I understand that, because you look at the AFC East, they can't get by. Nobody can get by the Patriots. And then other teams like the Broncos are like, crap, we've lost the Sheriff. We had our run with our good defense. Some of these other teams like the Chiefs, well, they went into the opener and beat up on the Patriots, yet now the Patriots are now better. So you look at this, when you build your entire conference to beat one team, you forget about that the NFC hasn't had a super dominant team for years. The Seahawks had a small little run. Small. It's very brief, back-to-back Super Bowls, but didn't win. Won one, lost one.
And they were challenged by San Francisco for a few years under Harbaugh.
Most definitely. And then you had Atlanta made its run last year. You had Carolina the year before. You've had Dallas. You've had Green Bay. Green Bay hasn't really been significant push until they won the Super Bowl in 10, but they lost to the Seahawks in NFC championship games. There's extreme parity in the NFC, and that's great because the Saints won their Super Bowl in 09. Now they're back a little bit playing better football. So I've always been more of the balanced side of the NFC because you don't have that uber-dominant Tom Brady team that everybody's trying to beat.
Yeah, it is a flip because in the 80s, we used to see everybody was chasing San Francisco. Yeah. 90s, everybody was chasing Dallas for a while. And then since then, you really haven't had that in the NFC.
I'll give you an example. I believe that the AFC is like the SEC, and Alabama is New England. And I believe that everybody else is kind of like the Big Ten and the rest of the conferences combined, where there's still, you get something in and out, you get a team here and there, but then you just have this one conference with this one juggernaut that everybody's trying to build to beat, but it's not conducive to beating other teams throughout.
Well, we saw it last night, Monday Night Football. It was headlined by that, the Panthers beating up on the Dolphins 45-21 in a game that really wasn't that close. Is Ryan Tannehill better than Jay Cutler? Cutler, 213.
You know how I feel about Ryan Tannehill. I think he's a very nice kid.
That's why I ask you.
He can't throw the deep ball. And I personally think that Jay Cutler is a better quarterback. If you're going to go intangibles, if you're going to skill set, arm, everything. Now, that's just me watching football. I think Ryan Tannehill had plenty of opportunities to try to win football games. Yeah. Remember, he was a wide receiver and then got changed to at Texas A&M under Sherman, who was his coordinator and coach, and then got brought into the Dolphins and said that...
Because Sherman was there.
Yeah, because Sherman was there. And so he just is... He doesn't have that it factor.
Yeah.
Jay Cutler has it. He just doesn't have the... I don't know if he has as much drive. Now, you heard last night on the broadcast, John Gruden said that Jay Cutler's been rejuvenated. He wants to continue to play. So who are you going to invest in if you're a Dolphins? Are you going to invest in Tannehill coming back? Are you going to invest in Jay Cutler? That's a good problem to have. You have two quarterbacks you think can lead you. I mean, what is, are they the same?
I don't think you can invest in both just the way that the CBA is and the way that Cutler wants. Cutler's going to want his money, you know? And they've already tied into Ryan Tannehill for quite a bit for next year, too.
Yeah, so what do you do? Do you release one? Do you cut ties with one? Do you try to negotiate one to two and say, Jay, you're on the tail end of your career. Can you take a pay cut and back up a little bit? What do you do? Is he gonna have teams calling? Because if he would have had teams calling, why didn't he get other opportunities?
Well, he was waiting for the right one.
Yeah, he was selective of where he wanted to go.
And I think getting out of Chicago really kind of, in Miami, it probably is a little bit different for Jay Cutler because there isn't that, 24-hour day, 7 days a week passion about the Dolphins in Miami like there is in Chicago. Not to say that that doesn't exist in Miami, but in Chicago, like it's everybody lives and dies by the Bears, you know, and everything is criticized to the nth degree because you're the Chicago Bears quarterback. In Miami, there isn't necessarily that element of it because it's Miami, you know. I wonder if him being in a place like that is really what is kind of helping him move along like that and have that feeling. Also, one note that I wanted to make from that game that I had jotted down. You're a big Cam Newton celebration guy.
Well, am I a big one?
Yeah.
Or I just like to watch the dynamics of it.
He threw a touchdown to, I believe it was Funchess. No, it was the Ed Dixon touchdown.
Uh-huh.
And he went and he grabbed the ball from Ed Dixon.
Yes, he did.
And it was Ed Dixon's touchdown.
Yeah.
And he grabbed it and made the celebration about himself, and he ran it over to the stands and gave the football to somebody.
Yes, he did. What? Cam's for Cam. Something about that name makes you be selfish.
Oh, ooh,
whoops.
I thought that I knew that when I saw that, I was like, you.
Oh, I was in few. I was just, like, this is you who know. You got, man.
I was like, that Cam will love that.
The ultimate me guy.
Do you not like sharing a name with him?
No, I don't care. I'm fine with it. Well, I have Cameron Diaz to lean back on.
Oh, Cammy. Cammy Diaz. Yeah.
Newton. Something about Mary that makes it much better.
Both Cam Newton and Cammy Diaz wear tight white pants. They have that in common, along with their name. Do you wear tight white pants?
That would be an awful thing to see.
Well,
I did in seventh grade, and I had a red Chuck Taylor and a turquoise Chuck Taylor on.
Had the opposites.
Yeah, because why?
That's right.
I got two pairs of Chuck Taylors.
Well, you do it.
I went red and turquoise.
I like it.
And my I was channeling my inner, you know, what would you call it in seventh grade? What would we call that at that time? Maybe it was Boy George.
Boy.
Maybe it was that.
You were channeling your inner Boy George?
Sounds awkward.
The look on your face, you don't seem proud of
that. You're highly influenced when you're in your middle school years.
Hey, Boy George was an icon, man.
Well, I know that. He had a karma chameleon.
Yeah. Okay, Pac-12 in the Northwest. The relevancy out West, it's not there. We know they're eliminated from the playoff. Has apathy set in for you, though, as a Northwest football fan? For the first time in a long time, the Northwest does not have a dog in the fight. Here's Crawford with SportsCenter.
Let's get texty.
I left a message.
A message? What number did you call?
2-4-9-5-6-7-8.
I can't hear you. You're trailing off. And did I catch a niner in there? Were you calling from a walkie-talkie?
No, it was cordless.
Text us now at 55305. Message and data rates may apply.
Just want to leave my number. Anyway, I think that was weird and desperate.
This is Textual Relations on the show that likes to be over-text. Dusty and Cam in the morning on 1080.
The brain of that person to actually say that?
The Fan.
55305. That is the Bridgeport Beers text line and how you can be a part of the show. Dusty here, Cam Cleland with you on this Tuesday morning. The Pac-12 is out. We know that. They won't be playing in the college football playoff. There's still a ton to play for, though, in the Pac-12 season. You got the North Division right now is a three-way tie at the top between Washington State at 6-2, Stanford 6-2, and Washington is 5-2 in conference play right now. And a Pac-12 title game berth and a New Year's Six bowl game is still in play for those three teams. Mm-hmm. But it just seems like there's this malaise over the Northwest in that for the second time in, I think, if you can go back, probably since 2010, This is only the second season where the Northwest hasn't had a school in the conversation for a college football playoff or a major BCS bowl berth.
Yeah, I said this during rivalry with Oregon and Washington. It was very apathetic here. And I said... What is it about the feeling of when you're out of it, supposedly you're out of it, you tune out or you're not willing to push yourself and say, okay, this is exciting. I really appreciate it. And I value what's going on here. This is great because you got Oregon State's going through a bunch of crap. You got Oregon, they lost their starting quarterback, but This is about, and remember how I went on my rant a little bit about caring more in the Pac-12 because we just are not in the show or in the dance?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. This text sums it up to me. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you that this isn't a thought process throughout our region or throughout our conference, but I kind of feel like it is. This text says, it does suck that the Pac-12 won't be in the playoffs. However, I would truly rather them not be in it than going and getting embarrassed. Mm.
So you're talking like
the fear of actually being in it when you say you cannot win. So you've beat yourself mentally before you've even been in there as a fan. Now, as a player and a coach out there, there are some guys that think like this, but the majority of great organizations or great brands or schools and traditions, never does that ever creep into their mind because that's kind of, that's a defeatist mentality.
So in that kind of line of thinking is the Big Ten has gone to the playoff the last 2 years. Well, they've been in every one. And the Big Ten has failed to score a point in the last two times that they've been to the college football playoff.
Been kicked in the giblets.
Michigan State and Ohio State both got shut out in the college football playoff semifinals. And I think that Texter's point is saying, you know, that you truly believe it rather than not be in it than going and getting embarrassed. If we look as with an unbiased eye, the Pac-12 doesn't have a team that's good enough to be there. They don't right now. They're one of the top four teams in the country, doesn't belong to be there. But getting there is actually so much better for the conference than staying at home. Because you get this idea of they don't belong in the conversation of being in the top four teams in the country if you miss several years in a row. Look at what it's done to the Big 12, for goodness sakes. The Big 12, I mean, everybody's like, what a joke that conference is because they missed on the college football playoff. And the Pac-12 being that conversation this year.
Yeah, and it does so much, not only financially, but it does it for notoriety throughout the entire country for recruiting. Be able to tell yourself that you have a dog in the fight. And this is kind of where we are. With only four teams eligible for this playoff, it makes it very difficult in five conference games or in five Power Five conferences. We're looking at it. But my thing is that here, locally, here in Portland, here in the state of Oregon, and then Southwest Washington, do you feel like there is a, we're not in it, so I'm giving up mentality? Is it that you don't care? Is it just because your team is not the most relevant team out there in the national conversation, have you given up? Because we call it, you know, title chasing. I don't have any problem with title chasing or trying to tell yourself you're better than you are. I've tried to convince here on the show. I've been very adamant about caring more as a conference and caring more as fans. These are the times right now when it's so bad, when it feels like it's just out of sight, out of mind. I don't want to go. I don't want to do this. Everybody feels it. From the organizations to the administrators, to the coaches, to the players, everybody feels it right now.
Why have we gotten to the point where making a bowl game doesn't matter?
Or it's insignificant.
That would be the same thing. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't.
It just sounds better when I say insignificant. Okay. Sounds like I'm smart.
If you're sitting there and you're looking at it, why has it gotten to this point? I mean, because if you look at it, there just feels like there's this deflation in the region. And I know it has a lot to do with, you know, Oregon is playing right now for the Cactus Bowl is the projections by a lot of people, which would be if Oregon wins one of their last two games against either Arizona this week or Oregon State in the Civil War, they will be Cactus Bowl bound.
Right.
Which is they projected to be Utah State on a game that. Previously, the Cactus Bowl has only been internet streaming available.
What does that mean?
But if it gets to that point, why isn't it a good thing to go to a bowl game? Is it national championship or bust now? Has the college football playoff being only four teams caused this? Because did it seem this way when it was the BCS? That there was... Just like if you weren't in the BCS championship game, it was out.
Remind me, because I don't remember this specifically. Who was it that said Rose Bowls aren't very cool. We need to go to the national championship.
D'Anthony Thomas.
D'Anthony Thomas. So that came from a player on the team.
Even Duck Van. Well, no, he said. He said Fiesta Bowl been there, done that. He wanted Rose Bowls in national championship.
No, he said Rose Bowl.
He wanted
a national championship game. This was before.
Yeah.
He said it specifically. Rose Bowl's been there, done that.
He got lit up for that.
But I feel like there is that thought process a little bit. When you get in it and you're in that run a little and you forget how lucky you are to be a part of that, to be relevant in the college football talk and how good it is to be at a 500 team. I'm sorry, 8 wins, 9 wins, 10 wins. You know how hard it is to get 10 wins in college football? 9 wins. Those are really good seasons.
Mm-hmm.
Very good seasons.
And very tough to do.
And that's why somebody like Stanford last year was looked as a down program. They got 9 wins. And then they went on and got 10 by beating up in the bowl game, by whooping up on North Carolina. That is a very good team. That's the most stable team in our conference. Did you know that? Stanford is the most stable team wholeheartedly because they find ways to be consistent and they're super structured and disciplined. And David Shaw is an unbelievable coach. But they are looked at as that apathetic team. It's like, oh, it's Stanford. They never can get over the hump. They're amazing. Every single year, they beat big teams. Mm-hmm. They win big games. No matter what, they're always consistent.
Yes, they are.
And I think all of us should appreciate that in your teams and appreciate them no matter who they are.
They are a model of consistency right now. I mean, it really has been. Because if you look at it, where has their down been? Like Oregon has a down right now. You know, like Washington had a down in the early 2000s for...
Early 2000s, well, like in, 8 years.
Yeah. Most of the 2000s.
All.
Washington State, Oregon State, in one. Well, they go up and down. They're a little roller coaster there. But they have been a USC sanctions, crushed that program. They went down. Cal was up. Now they're down and coming back up again. Stanford has been a model of consistency, and you're right in that. What has gone into this? 55305. Are you feeling the apathy? Text on the Bridgeport Beers text line next. Dusty and Cam on the Fan.
This is Dusty and Cam in the Morning on 1080 The Fan.
I'm counting up the bowl games right now, and I'm already up to 30... There's about 40 bowl games this year, which means 80 teams will go to a bowl, and that means 50 will stay at home in college football. So there will be more teams playing in bowl games than there will be at home this bowl season. And as I read the Bridgeport Beers text line 55305, is there's a lot of make a bowl game mean something. You know, bowl games are insignificant because there is a Cactus Bowl, too many, so no one cares. What does it give you, really? Need to make a bowl game mean something. And for teams like Oregon, we're getting a lot of this from Duck fans on the Bridgeport Beers text line, is that, hey, if you are talking about making a bowl game, that's 3 to 4 weeks of extra practice that you can add on to your season.
So this text
Young
says...
Young teams, that's huge.
It is. It's very big. This text says, I'll give lip service to how hard it is to maintain 8+ win season. Intellectually, I get it, but let's be honest, everybody wants a natty. I guess that means national championship. Even if your team ends with 10 plus wins and a conference title, you still are not satisfied. I want you to think of it this way. If you're something like a team like Alabama, when Nick Saban took over the team, he got 7 wins in 2007. Then it went to 12 wins, Sugar Bowl. Then it went to 14-0, and that was the first national championship. I'm sorry, it was a BCS championship at 12 wins, then it was 13 wins, 11 wins, 12 wins, and then 14, and then currently has 10. You don't just go from, this is the other thing, is that, okay, Oregon dropped off the map so quickly, you go from being the most relevant team in the conference and being in 2 national championship runs, then suddenly you have 4 wins. That's very, very, not only rare, but it takes a huge drop-off for something like that to happen. And then we can dive into why that happens, but consistency is what you're striving for. Nobody wants 4 wins, 5 wins, 8 wins, and then 14, and then 4 and 5. That shows inconsistency, because if you're in the conversation of being 10, 11, 9, 8, you're going to have the recruiting classes that show up. You're going to have the stability of coaches that are going to be there. You're going to have that consistency. And when that belief and consistency is there, that's when you pop and do get your national championship. You can't go 2, 3, 4 wins, 6 wins, and then go national championship. It doesn't work that way. Why? Because you don't have the kind of stability here in the Pac-12 like you do, or the coaches like an Urban Meyer or a Nick Saban. Those guys aren't just out there. There's only five or six of them in the country.
Yeah, and you use the anomaly as well on the other end of the. It is impossible to do what Nick Saban has done year in and year out. You did not mention a season that was under 10 wins in there.
No,
I mean, and that's an outlier just as much as it is to drop off the face of the planet like Oregon has this year, like Florida State. Is another great example. Like Florida State's dropped off the face of the earth this year, and we see that from time to time. Like there, a lot of goes into these ups and downs, like what has happened at Oregon. But I think it is more common to see what's happened at Oregon than it is to see what we see at Alabama or Ohio State right now.
Yeah, that's kind of my point. Is that embrace the moments you have. When it is consistent, when you have and you are relevant, embrace those 8-10 wins. That text that said, oh, I get to 10 wins, but everybody wants to be a natty. You need to really embrace 10 wins and realize how good that is and how awesome that is, how you're on the precipice of being a really relevant team, and love that point because that means you're in the conversation. You may not be in the national championship conversation, but you're in the conversation as a really good team.
Yeah.
That should mean more because the chase of just saying either we're good or I don't care. Does that kind of feel it? You know what I'm saying? It's a national championship run or nothing else matters. That's what the college football playoff has always been about.
Has four teams kind of caused the extreme element of this?
Yes, it has.
I think if you had eight in, yes. You would still be talking about a Pac-12 team with a chance to win a national title. You would still be talking about Washington and Washington State with a chance to win a national title if it was automatic qualifier. Gets there and goes. It seems like, you know, the fear was they said if you go to a playoff, the rest of the bowls won't mean anything. And to a degree, that's actually rang true in the first three years of the college football playoff. I think if you had more teams though, that conversation wouldn't be as dramatic as it is right now because you would still have a chance for a lot of teams. There is something to what you're saying though in that. A New Year's Six Bowl should still mean something. It seems like the Fiesta Bowl is the same thing as going to the Holiday Bowl or the, you know, San Diego Credit Union Poinsettia Bowl.
A fair question would be kind of like what this texter says. I think now we have a more of a National Football League mentality where it's playoffs or nothing. I'm telling you, remember, 12 teams make the playoffs out of 32 in the National Football League. That's 32 teams. We have 128 Division I football teams. 130. Only four make it.
Yeah.
So we're asking for eight. You get just the percentages. If you said I get eight in out of 130, that makes it a lot more interesting for the entire college football as a whole. NFL gets 12 out of 32. That means you can go 8-8 and make it in. And then there's the naysayers. And I'll call Joel Klatt because Joel said this. He says, I don't want teams that have 4 and 5 losses. And explain to me why. If you win your conference, explain to me what is wrong with that. The mentality is if you're not good enough to win your conference, then you don't deserve to be in the conversation because we're supposed to make parity here.
And what was, I mean, and like it goes back to what this texture says, you know, those teams would get killed if they had
So what?
They would have a chance to win regardless of how big the playoff is. And no matter how big you brought it out, they're saying that the best four teams would still win every single time.
I did this too. We did it in high school this year. You do high school every single year. Mm-hmm. Which teams are always at the end of the end? Majority of handful of teams.
It's
the same
like
four or five,
West,
right?
Lynn, Lake, Oswego,
but guess who all
Jesuit?
Gets in? There's a whole new strategy to let teams in, but the first two rounds are blowouts. We did Washington. You did it. The first two rounds are blowouts. Okay, you do it in college football. The first couple rounds might be a blowout. For gosh sakes, Ohio State didn't score a point. It was a blowout. The NFL, there's blowouts in the first round and in wild card games because that's the NBA. Mm-hmm. There's blowout. Major League Baseball, it's here, folks. Why do we think college football deserves close games in playoff situations? It's just part of what it is. Win your conference, win your division. There needs to be a value. And there needs to be an interest of that.
And that is something that I think the Pac-12 is missing, is that the conference champion, it won't mean anything because also on top of it.
Well, it means something.
Hold on. The value of the Rose Bowl is gone. There is no Rose Bowl.
I want to tell everybody out there that's listening or anything, any player, nobody players are listening to this, but this is my own personal thing. When you get a chance to say you won your conference and get to put a championship ring on, I don't care if you say it's not that big of a deal. when you get a chance to have a championship ring for these guys that work their butts off, that's pretty important for them and those coaches because that cements them as a top team in their conference. It may not be a big deal nationally.
It has been devalued, though.
It's not devalued from the players and coaches and home fans' perspective. If Washington State wins the next two games, goes down and plays USC and beats USC, that is monstrous for the Cougs.
It absolutely has.
That is not irrelevant.
No.
It was huge for Washington last year.
But it is. Because they also went to the college football playoff.
But Dusty, they
haven't. Hold on. That added extra value to winning the conference championship. And now it's you go to the Fiesta Bowl and the value of propping that game up.
That is insignificant. What is significant is it's big for the team
and
the region.
I'm not fighting you on that, but it has been largely devalued in the fact that when you win, it used to be you go to the Rose Bowl, you know where you're going. It is you go to the college football playoff, you know where you're going. Now it's like you don't know where you're going. Fiesta Bowl is probably where it's going to be.
But you still won your conference.
I get it.
If Oregon State wins a conference.
I get what you're saying.
Can you imagine seeing a beaver ring with all diamonds with black?
That would be awesome.
Same with Oregon. Anybody that wins the conference.
I'm saying in the larger scope of it.
Yeah.
And I get what you're saying. It has been devalued to win the conference because that Rose Bowl isn't there anymore. The playoff isn't a guarantee. And that's what sucks about it is that what you're saying, it should be propped up more by having that carrot dangling in front of you. And it's not there for the Pac-12.
You know what? I guess what I'm arguing against is the coaches, players in that perspective and then the fans' perspective of it's not getting you to the top.
Yeah.
But because I fight this all the time of the player perspective and and the coaches and the fight that you go through to win your own conference feels so good, no matter if you got in or not. It still feels really good.
I'm with
you. But from a fan perspective, it's devalued because it didn't make it.
And that's what sucks is that fans should have, it should be something. And, you know, if the Cougs win the next two and are North Division champs.
Oh, yeah.
Then they have a chance to win.
Trust
that
me, I was on the field when the Cougs knocked me out of the Pac-12 champion or Pac-10 championships, and they celebrated with roses. And I saw those guys, and I went, man, how cool is that?
The Blazers roll the Nuggets up. Dustin Cam on the Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.